Welcome back to the KPL podcast. I'm your host, Jagisha. This week, we talked to author Shabnam Khan about her new book, The Djinn Waits 100 Years. If you like gothic novels with a large cast of quirky characters, a precocious 16-year-old, an old mansion, and a djinn, then this book is for you. I was intrigued when I read the summary for this book, and so I emailed the author for an interview. So here's my interview with Shabnam Khan.
Well, Shabnam, welcome to the KPL podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I'm very excited to talk about your book.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
So to start off with, just tell us about the book. Give us a summary.
It's a novel about a young girl who moves to a house on the east coast of South Africa in Durban about 100 years ago. So she starts looking into the house and exploring locked rooms, and she finds diaries that tell her the story about what happened 100 years ago when the house was originally built and when a group of Indians who had come from India to live in South Africa had built the house. And she sort of uncovers the tragedy that happened. In the present, she begins to also learn about the strange characters living in the house. And it's kind of like those two timelines are running together. And ultimately, we find out what happened in this house 100 years ago and why there is a djinn haunting the house and being in a state of mourning.
Mm-hmm. So what inspired the story?
You know, the story took a long time to write, so I can't tell you exactly what inspired it, because it was a lot of different things, a lot of different ideas that came together. And I think this is where the gothic genre was suitable for this kind of story, because there were so many different elements that I was inspired by. Like, I've always loved ghost stories from the time I was little. I always thought stories about the djinn from the Quran. Always loved a good romance, and even sadly a tragic romance. Yeah, and I think that's why the gothic genre was perfect for it, because I was able to incorporate all those different elements that I'd always wanted to use in a story.
One of the things I loved is the cast of characters. You had so many amazing, wonderful characters. And I also love the two timelines. So could you tell us a little bit more about the characters?
Yeah, I mean, I love creating characters. I love making, you know, I love the strong characters that can carry the story for me, because I'm not a great plotter. I'm not an author who uses plot a lot. And so I rely a lot on the characters to take the story forward for me, and I go where they lead me. So I'm always interested in interesting characters who don't necessarily fit into what we think society is. And I was intrigued in putting them in a house together and seeing how they interacted with one another.
Yeah. I think the interactions was some of the best parts, you know. So just the two ladies, Fancy and Rizia Bibi, I think it was, and just their constant bickering.
Misfits, as it were, interacting with one another. And also because I write a lot about Durban, I feel like I see that a lot in Durban, where I live, which is like when I go shopping with my mother for vegetables on the street, you'll just see, and especially when we're going vegetable shopping for some reason, you always see these group of characters around the fruit and vegetables, like talking about the weather or talking about how they're sick or talking about, and they don't know each other, but they're so interested in the little stories. You can see that they're also just really want company and they just want to have a good chat. So, and I think I really wanted to have a cast of characters who bounced off one another. So even the bickering woman, my mother has 7 older sisters. I have 3 older sisters. Like, I love the way women interact and the way they can needle each other in just the right ways. They are friends at the heart of it, I feel. And they did love each other once, you know. I loved having being able to explore the interactions, especially between Razia Bibi and Fancy.
Akbar Manzil is the name of the mansion that they're living in. And it seems to be like a character in its own right. So is it based on a real location?
No, it's not. But I have watched and I have read like a lot of like horror books and suspenseful mysteries. And, you know, there's always the haunted house. Mm-hmm. There's no huge house like that. But, you know, I've passed a lot of ruins and I always imagine what could have been the story behind that ruin.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Akbar. So He's a fascinating character in the sense that he does whatever he wants, and so, and he's very clueless. I mean, he makes all these decisions for himself, and it affects all the women in his life, but he just does whatever he wants.
He does. And I'm very aware of that. So even in the novel, his Janara, his first wife, says that to the second wife. She says, men, they think they can just live the lives that they want. They can just do what they want. And he just thinks life is a big romantic journey that he can just take. And he doesn't realize like what the real world is like and how hard it is for us. So, I mean, I feel like that's a small part of the novel that acknowledges that he just gets to do what he wants. And it's not just, I didn't want it to be just a part of the story where we just accept, oh, yes, because he's so romantic and so dreamy and so dashful that he can just do what he wants. I wanted to call him out a little bit on it. And yeah, I mean, it's a man's world. I mean, especially I think at that time in the 19, wait, when it's set in the 1920s, he's the man of the house, he runs things, and he gets to be as romantic and poetic and whimsical almost as he wants to be, and that's acknowledged.
I mean, he settles in Africa. Not that his wife doesn't want to. He gets a lion kit and just he has small children, yet he's like, okay, I'm just gonna get a lion. That's fine.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I have to ask about food is a major feature throughout the book. I think cooking is, I mean, I think it's it can't you can't really talk about Indians unless without food. So do you have a favorite dish? Because I was hungry reading your novel.
Well, all my aunts are cooks, and my mom is a good cook, so food automatically will come into anything that I'm writing, generally speaking. And that's a very interesting question. Do I have a favorite dish? This is a good question. I love all different types of food. It's hard to say. Maybe biryani. Maybe my mother's biryani. It's a very typical thing to say, but I do love my mother's biryani.
So there was a, I think there in the book where I think Ruzia Bibi was teaching Sana how to make rotis. My mother did almost the same thing. So when I was first learning how to do that, yeah, she was like, oh, that's not the way, those aren't round, but she was not as polite. I think Ruzia Bibi was more polite than my mom.
Oh, my mother too. My mother too. She still shouts me until now. This is probably why I'm not married, because I can't roll round rotis.
Yep, that makes sense. Pinky Sana and the Doctor both enjoy Hindi films. Now, are you a Shah Rukh Khan fan like Pinky?
I can't imagine anyone who's seen an Indian film not be a Shah Rukh Khan fan. So I am.
True.
And I can imagine who is trapped in like easily be swept away by someone so exuberant and so full of life. And you would attach a lot of your meaning to life to someone like that. And so I could easily imagine her being really charmed by this actor. And as well, your name, even when I heard your name, I've never heard that name, but I instantly thought of a Shah Rukh Khan movie, Kal Ho Na Ho, where the characters are like, oh, if we have a child, we're gonna name our child Jiggy or Jig. They keep variations of the name Jiggy. I was wondering if that was the name that they were thinking of. A small interesting point.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to remember that part in the film. I have seen it, so I'll have to go back and check.
You should. It's really good.
All right. So if I was to, your descriptions of Durban were incredible, and I really wanted to visit. So if someone were to come, what would be the some of the places that they should check out?
Yeah, I'm always worried that people are going to read this book and then everybody wants to come to Durban, because somebody, even my editor, told me that. She was like, "Are you ready for people to want to visit Durban?" So yes, I've lived here my whole life and I feel like I have a really love-hate relationship with the city. I can describe it well because I've lived here my whole life and I understand the small nuances of it, and I understand the heat and the seasons, and I can describe it in a way as someone who knows the city. And so I do think it's a very interesting city. But I also know it has a lot of visitor, and there's so, one of the most beautiful things about Dublin is that it's so green and so warm. So even if you come here in winter, it's pretty much the rest of the country comes to the city here for winter, even because we've got the warm Mozambique current running along the city. So it keeps and the Indian and the warm Indian Ocean. So it keeps the coast quite warm. And so I think the first thing you should do is like do a hike. There's a lot of little waterfall areas around the area. There's a lot of drives along the beach just to get that greenery. For me, that's really important. And then you have to eat the food here as well, because I think Indians have been living in South Africa for so long. It's, I mean, I don't think people realize we're like third generation now already. It's from the early 19th century. So we created our own African and Indian spices. I think there's some foods here that you do have to taste when you come here. Definitely you have to swim in the ocean because, well, recently our beaches have been dirty, but the water has been tested and it's fine and it's very warm. So it's for me, it's like some of the best beaches in the world because the ocean is so warm. And yeah, I think so. See the greenery, go to the beach and eat the food. And yeah, those are the things I would suggest if you come to Durban.
Oh, that sounds really
Oh,
good.
eat the fruit. If you come in summer, sorry, if you come in summer, eat the fruit. There's so much of fruit in summer. It's incredible. It's amazing. We have so much of lychees. Like I would say these are unusual fruit for if you live in the US. Watermelon, lychee is grapes. It's just like a lot of summer fruit in abundance, which are grown here. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I bet there's really good mangoes.
Yeah, and I forgot the mangoes. I was just thinking as you said it. It's amazing mangoes, amazing. And now they're in season, so it's just the best.
So, getting back to the book. I really enjoyed the book and I didn't want it to end. I want it to be like the djinn following the characters around as they went off on their, separate lives now. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the audiobook, because I listened to the audiobook. I also read the book, but the narrator who did the book, Sonali Nankani, she was very good at bringing the characters to life. Did you have any input with that?
She was great. Like, oh yeah. I mean, basically, I had to listen to like five auditions, and I just loved her immediately. I felt like she got the gist of the book. She got the feeling. She had the emotion. Every sentence for me felt measured and real, and like that she was putting everything she could into each sentence, and it felt epic. Her reading felt sweeping and epic and cinematic in the way that I wanted the novel to feel. So I feel she captured that. I haven't heard the whole thing. I'm very curious to hear the whole thing. So I get to approve the reader, and I get to I have to help with certain words. Like, I mean, they'll ask me pronunciations of certain things that maybe she's not sure about how to pronounce, but that's the most that I get. I give in. Otherwise, it's all her, and I'm very interested in listening to the whole thing.
Oh, definitely you should. She, you know, she's very good at making the characters sound distinctive. So I can tell who the doctor is, I can tell who Akbar is, and then the different Fancy and Riza Bibi and all that. She was very good at that.
Oh, amazing. I went to hear Akbar. I haven't heard Akbar.
Tell us a little bit more about your process.
So my process of writing is very haphazard. I don't have a very singular process. I wish I did. I hope for my next book that I can be that writer who just has a proper whiteboard with a detailed plot of how she's going to do this and what's going to happen. For me, it's a lot about, as I mentioned earlier, the characters taking the story forward for me. So I do have like rough ideas of what's going to happen, and I like the idea of a house, and I like the idea of something happened in this house. I like the idea of a djinn. But then putting those elements together takes a long time, and that's why this book took me a long time to write. It took like 8, 9 years. Not of continuously working on it, but just of letting the ideas like sort of marinate and being inspired by different things at the time. And I really think also that no the novel needed that space and that amount of time. It frustrated me that it took me so long, but I think it needed that amount of time to fit together in the way that it did. So my process is not linear. It's all over the place. It's like a painter who's just splashing paint on the canvas and then trying to figure out what goes on here.
Yeah, so how the pieces all connect together.
Yeah. Now, and I'm surprised at the end at the results sometimes.
I was thinking about Sana and the main, like she's the main character, and she was interesting just to see her evolution, the character arc, and how she went from being this, sort of curious person, and then she withdraws for a little bit, and then she kind of finds her space. It's like a coming of age story.
Yeah, and I mean, I think ultimately she had to be, she almost like on page one when Sana is described, she's described as someone who can't speak and who's very quiet and who can't articulate herself, and she finds it difficult to form words in her mouth, and so when she comes into that house, she starts to find her voice through looking through the rooms and discovering the history of the house, and especially I think through finding the diaries of Mina and meeting this character Mina, who is so strong-willed and strong-headed and is so determined to make her voice heard and to is a brave character, which is unlike Sana. And so I think Sana is inspired by her a lot because she also didn't have a woman like that in her life. She didn't find that in her mother. So really her character development is through the plot of the story, which is her finding these diaries and meeting Mina and also learning to stand up to her fears, which is literally her sister. So I knew that she was going to articulate herself properly. I did feel like it would be too obvious in the end to make her someone who just opens up, So it's a very gradual thing by the end. It's not, it just, I think some of the last lines, we talk in the beginning about her having a feeling like there's a box in her chest rattling with something inside. And then on the last page, I think it's, she hears a click, almost like the box has opened. And for me, that was enough to show you that, her future will open up in a way that it wasn't before.
Yeah, no, she had a amazing character arc. Just list following her and, listening to the book and everything. I was just like, okay, this is just beautifully done.
Thank you.
So, as you mentioned, you have another book that you're working on. So, what's next, or can you tell us anything about it?
I am working on something new, but it's nonfiction, and I think it's too early to say what I'm working on.
Okay.
So, but I'm a bit nervous about speaking about it. So I probably shouldn't. But I know I'm going to get this question a lot, so I need to prepare better for it. But I don't think it's a good time to. It's too early.
Okay. So, will you
It's
do
too early.
another
Yeah.
Gothic?
I do like the idea of magic realism. So I do like playing with that idea. I do think I will go into that more. I like the idea of playing with the truth and with what we imagine, because for me that's close to real life. We all carry things with us, whether they feel real or not, and we all carry history with us. And I'm interested. I'll always be interested in exploring those like ghostly spaces or those liminal spaces of where you're afraid, hopeful, and those are magical spaces. And I'm always interested in writing about that kind of magic. I think that answers your question. I hope so.
Oh, yes. So, one of the other things is the exploration of all of the different current characters and the past characters and their past and their th and just, just weaving between their different stories was just, I think, like I said, this is why I didn't want to leave the characters. I wanted to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you didn't want to leave the characters. I think I'm always interested in people's history. I'm always interested in what stories people have, and they'll always surprise you. People always surprise you with the kind of things that they have, and I'm fascinated by love stories. So I'm always interested in different love stories. This is from childhood. I've just always wanted to know about how people meet. I've never had a love story myself, so I'm always interested in other people's love stories, people who have had long-term happy relationships, and people who have had really terrible relationships, and people who want revenge, and people who are jealous, and people who genuinely connect in a very wholesome, good way that's good for them. And I'm always interested in exploring that. And so Sana was the perfect way of me being able to tell all these different characters' stories. I mean, at one point, I worried that there were too many characters with too many backstories in the novel, but I had to find ways to kind of rein them in and also give you the ones that were just going to carry the main plot forward.
No, I think it was, again, I keep saying this, but yeah, it was just really well done, well integrated together, and I really love the book. I will be telling everybody about it.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled that you loved it. And you're actually one of the first interviews that I'm doing. I've only done one else.
Okay, great. So my last question I always ask all the authors is, what are you reading or what would you recommend?
Well, I mean, what I would recommend always, one of my favorite writers is Arundhati Roy's The God of Small Things, which is famous, I know, but which is sometimes, I think a lot of people are reading contemporary stuff. They're not reading way back. And that's one of the books that really influenced me in my writing and showed me that writing can really open up language and make language a whole world that you can step into. So that's one of the ones that I would recommend. I'm currently reading R.F. Kuang's Babel, which I'm still reading. It's a really long book. But I mean, it's really interesting just about from the translation point of view. And I love books. And this is what I was trying to do with The Djinn Waits 100 Years as well, where we are able to put people of color at the forefront, especially during colonial times, to show you that they had these incredible stories going on. And it's not that you're going back and changing history, but you're going back and showing their points of view, which we don't always get, and especially stories from back then in those times. You never got stories like that. I love that, and I'm enjoying that. And enjoying that, and I like how self-aware and critical she writes as well about what was happening at the time in Oxford. And it's also got that touch of magic realism. So I really enjoying it, especially the research that went into it as well, and the whole going into translation. What does it mean to be a translator? What does it mean to translate language? And so I'm enjoying that at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that was another aspect of the of your book that I also was like, you know, we get to see Indians and get another perspective from that time period, because that's something, you're right, those stories are not out there, and so it's great that writers are putting that out there.
Absolutely. I mean, I also feel like I don't like to say it's our duty as writers, because I don't feel like, I mean, I feel like writers should be able to write whatever they want. But I do think if you're a writer of color, you're always constantly aware of that. And you're also constantly aware that you grew up reading stories. I mean, the Gothic stories that I was reading growing up only had white people in it. So it's important to me, if I have any position, to try to change those stories a little. And create a diverse world, because that is the world we live in,
Yes, absolutely. So, is there anything else you'd like to add or talk about? Those are all of my questions, but did I miss something that I should have asked?
I mean, I guess I also wanted to say is that it was important to me to write about, I know we've talked about Durban, but it was important for me to write about Durban because I feel like a lot of people don't know too much about the East African Indian community. I've been in this city so long, and somehow I've got stuck here. It's a city that people leave if you have ambitions, and somehow, even though I've had ambitions, I'm still here. I wanted to be able to tell its story in its own sort of weird, wonderful city that it is. And one more thing is that I worked at a library, and I love that my book is a library picks, and I love that I'm doing a podcast with a librarian. I grew up in a library, basically. And when I didn't know what I was doing with my life, I volunteered in a library for almost a year. My dad told me, do something with your life if you're not going to study. And so I volunteered, and I know the power that you'll have, and it's incredible. You shape people's lives. Like the librarian in my local library shaped my life. I don't think I would have been a writer without her. So I'm really thrilled to be able to speak here. Yeah.
Oh, yep. Thank you.
It's great work. It's incredible.
Yes, thank you. Well, listeners, The Djinn Waits 100 Years is here at the Kirkwood Library, and you can get it wherever great books are sold. Thank you so much for doing this podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved being here.
That's our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Join us next week when we talk to author Noah Whiteman about his book, Most Delicious Poisons, the story of nature's toxins from spices to vices. This should be very interesting. Until next week.